I'm speaking today via speakerphone with State Senator Leticia Vandeput of San Antonio. She is the chair of the House Democratic Caucus. I guess my first question for you, we're about 6 weeks into the legislative session. Talk to me a little bit about how it's gone so far and what you see as the top priorities for the Democratic Caucus in the Senate.
Thanks so much. I have had the honor and privilege of serving as chair of the Senate Democrats since June of 2003, and it was very exciting that first month when we broke quorum and went to New Mexico for 47 days to fight, at that time, Tom DeLay's plan for mid-decade redistricting. And in the 5 years, I've seen many of the policies that we as Democrats fought for just undone by the Republican leadership that's out of touch with particularly middle-class Texans. As I look for any progress on the 81st session, I know that policy is not made in the vacuum without politics. And I say that because on the Senate side, everything that my Republican colleagues seem to do is focused on the potential race between Governor Perry and Kay Bailey Hutchison coming back home to challenge him, and then all of the Republican musical chairs to fill that nominee for the Republicans on Kay Bailey's side, and then the speculation of what Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst is going to do. And so there's a political overtone to what we see. But I'm hoping that what I am focused on and what the Democrats are focused on, first and foremost, is because of the economic downturn nationally and in our state, it's about three things, at least for me, and I think I can probably speak for the rest of the Democratic caucus. It's about the economy and jobs, and that means protecting the workers that have lost their jobs, making sure that they get the unemployment benefits and opportunities to seek other employment. It's about the environment, and particularly moving to a cleaner footprint for Texas. It is reducing our emissions and doing the things that we know that will protect our water supply and improve air quality. And it also creates jobs. I mean, we're talking about a new green economy, these green-collar jobs, and that's what Democrats are focused on. And then probably the most important thing is education. Really getting support and the resources needed to our precious neighborhood schools. The Republicans have, when we had those horrible years in 2003 with a $10 billion shortfall, they took it out on college students with, deregulating tuition at our universities. They took it out on our elderly by slashing all of the protections and the programs that we had for our senior citizens. And they took it out on kids and mentally ill programs that deal with substance abuse and mental illness, child protective services. Meanwhile, we still found $300 million for our lieutenant governor to give to, and the speaker and the governor to attract businesses, but we cut kids, I think that the investment in education is what we feel absolutely needs to be done in our public school system. And we've got the opportunity to do that. We have not been funding education, and it's about making the investment in our kids. So if I had to narrow it down, I would say those are the three things that we're going to be working on. But then we get an unbelievable amount of legislation that's being proposed by my Republican colleagues that is not relevant and important to working families. It's just not. I mean, the things that they're doing are a license plate that says, choose life. Well, what we ought to be doing is, you know, investing in correct and accurate information for our teenagers on contraception and pregnancy and, you know, disease rather than abstinence only. We ought to be doing abstinence plus. They are not supporters of a women's health program so that women can get family planning services. And yet we know that, you know, I just sometimes can't believe that no one wants to have an increase in abortions. The best way to prevent an abortion is to prevent unplanned pregnancies. And yet they cut those programs that would give those services to women. So that, they focus on stuff like that when we're focusing on jobs and the economy and the environment. It just seems like they're so out of sync with what our families are telling us in our districts.
Let me talk about one of the other things that they seem to have focused on, since that grabbed a lot of attention on the very first day in the state senate, and that's voter ID. They managed to successfully set the rules so that the traditional two-thirds rule required to bring a bill to floor debate would not be enforced for anything having to do with a voter ID bill. So my question about that is, one, how has that affected the atmosphere in the Senate, which is normally considered to be more collegial than the House? And two, you know, where do we stand on that? And, you know, given that this was done in effect to neuter the Democratic opposition to it, do you guys have any cards left to play on that?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up. I just received word that my Republican colleagues want to bring the first bill to the floor, the voter ID bill. They undid Senate traditions and rules to make this piece of legislation, which deals with voter impersonation, which there's never been a case prosecuted of voter impersonation, not even any complaints of voter impersonation, to bring this bill as so important that it's got to be out first. They undid the traditional two-thirds rule, which in the Senate means that 11 senators can block any piece of legislation. But what that means is you need 20 senators to agree. You need 21 senators to agree. That's proven very effective. When Democrats controlled the Texas Senate, it made sure that the minority, who was Republicans, always at least had a seat at the table. It has protected Democrats in that policy can't be passed with that's not bipartisan. That at least, you know, you got to have a Democrat agree, one of them at least. So what they've done in voter ID, and understand, this is a voter identification bill that they say is because we have to cut down on all this fraud, but there's never been a case of voter impersonation. The real reason they want to do this, and we know it, it's a Karl Rove tactic, because we know that people of color, our senior citizens, the very same group that tends to vote Democrat, tends not to have identification in the same percentage. So requiring them to have identification shades, by studies and by statistics, 3 to 4 points in a general election off any Democratic candidate. That's what they're after. In a way, I feel complimented that our state is turning more common sense and more middle of the road and heading toward Democratic values that they feel so desperate to hang on to anything they feel like they have to pass this. You're the first person I've talked to and that has been announced that our hearing on the voter identification bill, which I call the voter suppression bill, is on March 10th.
March 10th. All right. Well, I will mark my calendar. In the meantime, you know, at least on the House side of things, there's been hearings going on regarding the spending of the stimulus money. And just today, there was some. I received a press release from among others, you calling on Governor Perry to make using stimulus funds that are geared towards unemployment insurance a priority, a legislative emergency, so it can be worked on right away. Talk to me a little bit about this, and you know, why would any state want to turn that down? I mean, the argument seems to be that we might have a tax increase in the future, but what, you know, does that make sense?
It doesn't make sense, but understand the rhetoric of Governor Perry and of our Republican leaders all through last year. They kept saying, oh, you know, Texas is not experiencing the downturn. Our economy is strong. And they said it's because we did massive tort reform, and it's because we saved our money and we didn't spend it. And, you know, we're in great shape. We're solid. And they were, you know, kind of beating their chest about it, but it didn't match up with what we were hearing in our districts. You know, families, middle-class families, were being squeezed. You know, one person in the family, one spouse gets a pink slip, the other one gets reduced job hours. There are a lot of folks that are, you know, going from struggling from paycheck to paycheck, and there always seems to be more bills at the end of the month than, you know, a disposable income to put that through. And these are families that have worked hard, they've been saving, and through no fault of their own, they are one half payment away from foreclosure. They're down to one car. Their kids are struggling. They're going to secondhand stores for their shoes and clothes. You know, it wasn't matching up. And yet, when we got here, the real numbers came out. In fact, this week, the unemployment figures for the state of Texas are 120% increased from this comparable week a year ago. So in 1 year's time, we have record number of folks who are applying. And they're applying because they've lost their jobs. We're not immune. And what makes sense to me is that however you feel about the stimulus package, whether you were for it or against it, the fact of the matter is, it passed. And Texans, at least through our state budget, we will get about $16 billion. They estimate about $29 billion for the whole state, and that's through local projects, schools, things that are cities and counties. But all of us pay IRS taxes, and all of our children and our grandchildren are also going to be faced with the debt on this. I just don't understand why my Republican friends think it's so bad to take the stimulus money when we're going to be paying it. I mean, how much sense does it make to be paying debt for roads in South Dakota? So I think it's, I mean, we talk about the Texas two-step, I mean, talk about two-faced. This is incredible that they would deny people in our state who have lost their jobs the help that the federal government is sending, and yet we're straddled with the debt on paying this off. So it doesn't make any sense. I think it's common sense to use this and to use it in an appropriate manner. We've asked several of the lawmakers who have always worked in unemployment insurance. People who have lost their jobs, they're going to lose their jobs. Let's help the people who have already been affected. You know, what they tell us is that all indications is that we haven't hit the rock bottom of our economy. It's going to be a tough summer. And they say we won't even start any sort of upturn until sometime late fall. I say let's use this money, pass those bills that need to be passed, because Texas has never been generous on its unemployment insurance. We have to change our system slightly. Let's pass those bills so that people who have already lost their jobs can get some help.
Okay. Let's talk for a second about education, in particular higher education, since there seems to be a lot of bills out there now aimed at rolling back in some form the tuition deregulation that was passed in 2003 as a part of the budget austerity of that year. The deal with tuition deregulation at the time was, in exchange for being able to set tuition rates as they saw fit, the public universities would accept less money from the state up front. Now, if we're talking about restricting their right to set tuition at whatever level they want, are we going to make that up on the back end by giving them more money? That's the piece of this puzzle I haven't seen. What can you comment on that?
Well, I got to tell you, one of the poorest policy decisions the legislature ever made, and I want to tell you that was the first time in my life I voted against a whole budget. And it was because of the tuition deregulation. It was because of the slashing of our children's health insurance program. We took these budget cuts out on our college students, our seniors, and children who need health insurance. I would prefer that we go back to the old system where the legislature decides, because what has happened in essence is when the legislature deregulated, what they said is higher ed is not a priority for us. Let the regents decide and get the money from the students and the families by tuition. It lets the legislature off the hook. We will never put in the priority that we need on higher ed if we can punt it to someone else. And that's why I fought tuition deregulation. I hope that we're able to overturn it. There are several bills. I think that we need to go back, but in reality, if we can at least rein in the amount of increase significantly, I think it will be a positive step. Again, this is a Republican-controlled state. If we do something like that, I bet Rick Perry will veto it, like he vetoed so much other stuff that, you know, helps students. And you realize how much higher education funding he vetoed from the last session on the community college level and at the four-year institutions. He line-itemed that budget and made those budget cuts. And why? This is the investment in our future. I'm hoping, though, on tuition that we will come with a solid proposal. In fact, I just had, before talking to you today, I just had an office full of UT students who wanted to come visit me about tuition.
Okay. Looking ahead to 2010, as you said at the beginning of this interview, a lot of what's been going on legislatively has been about the upcoming Rick Perry, Kay Bailey Hutchison Republican primary for governor. On the Democratic side, there's not a whole lot so far of not a whole lot of people expressing interest in running for governor. Although, as of late, I mean, there was an article in San Antonio Current that's gotten some people talking about the possibility that you might run possibly for governor. Can you comment on that?
Sure. I got to tell you, I've been in the legislature for 18 years, and I love being in the legislature. I'm just blessed with a district that allows me to do, you know, what I do, both the 9 years in the House and now the starting the ninth year in the Senate. I have six children, and their ages 19 through 28. And three of them are still in college. Three of them are out and gone. In fact, two of them are married. But my three children are in college, and my husband Pete and I joke that we suffer from maltuition. But this is the first time that I haven't said outright no when people have approached me to run for any higher office. And I got to tell you, honestly, the reason is because my first responsibility was always to my kids, and they're an incredible set of young men and women. And so I didn't say no outright, which I think surprised some folks. Democrats are going to field quality candidates. Long over the day when we just abdicate this. We are getting across our message about investment in Texas, about protecting the environment, about creating jobs, about supporting working families and college students. That's resonating very well in suburban areas and in rural areas. We are growing in numbers because we're right on the policies. And so I have said that I want to be part of that winning effort for our Democratic candidates in 2010 or 2012. Now, that may mean Leticia Vanderpeet's in one of those. It may not. I'm really not going to decide anything until after the legislative session, because I really have to focus. I've got a very ambitious legislative agenda in education, public education, and in the environment. And I'm carrying a huge amount on the unemployment insurance and the things on jobs. So that's really what I'm focused on. But I am I'm kind of humbled, and I'm really proud that people at least have asked and said, you know, you might be a really good candidate. Don't rule it out just yet. Well, I'm not ruling it out, but my focus right now for the next, really until the end of the session, is going to be doing the job I need to do for the people in the district that I represent.
When the gavel comes down and the legislature is adjourned CNADA, what do you want to be able to say about what has happened?
Well, you know, I just don't want to lose right anymore. I don't want to stand up and, you know, be righteously indignant and say, yeah, we fought the good fight, but we lost. I want to win some issues. And it's not to win for winning's sake. It's because when Democrats win, the policy changes. And when the policy changes, that affects our families' ability to have a good quality of life, then it's a win for everybody. It's the policy change. It's translational. I mean, sure, candidates love to have the wins, and we love to have it, but, I mean, I want to win on some things that are going to make a difference in our neighborhood schools, in health care, in access, in the environment, protecting our environment. That's important. And so I'm hoping that we will be successful in that, and I know that we're on the right track because I'm filing some of the same bills that I did last session that the Republican leadership, I didn't even get a hearing on. Now I've got Republican senators coming and asking me, can I join off of that with you? Can I help you with that? So I know our message is getting across, and it's not that our message has changed. It's just that people have woken up. They have figured out what's happened under this failed leadership, and they want to go in a new direction. And nothing was more symbolic than that than the great election that we had in November.
All right, Senator Leticia Vanderpeet, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate you covering this and covering so much of the stuff that you do. What happens here in the Capitol is very important, and it directly affects people's lives.